This podcast is brought to you by GBS, where you'll find flexible education that fits around your busy lifestyle. For more information on GBS courses, visit globalbanking.ac.uk.
So, hello everyone, and welcome to An Audience With, the podcast series from GBS. I'm Steve Tolk, and I'll be your host for this session. Now, I'm not the usual host of this series, but we felt that for this first episode of 2022, it would be a great opportunity to find out a bit more about our regular host, Dr. Stephen O'Brien. Stephen is with us today, and I've flipped the tables on him as host becomes guest. So on this special edition of An Audience With, we're going to meet Dr. Stephen O'Brien, author, poet, lecturer in creative writing at the University of Portsmouth, visiting fellow of creative writing at University College Chichester, and of course, our regular host of An Audience With here at GBS. Welcome, Stephen.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, wonderful to have you with us today. Great. So, looking at your CV, I kind of noticed that we have something in common beyond both of us being Stevens, of course. And that's something that we share with many of our GBS students. A lot of our GBS students have a very unconventional route into higher education, and they find higher education later in life. And I think we both started university at the age of 24. That's right?
That's right.
Yeah. Fine old age to start university. For me, it was perfect. It was the right moment in my life to go to higher education. I wonder if you could tell me more about what led you to return to education at that age.
Well, I came from quite a working class family, and no one had gone to university. However, I had a lot of friends who'd gone to university, and I was. When I left school, I didn't have any qualifications. I didn't pass any of they called them O levels in those days. I didn't pass anything, and I still have I still only have two English GCSEs and no A levels and no other qualifications below my degree.
Wow. Okay.
And so I started reading. Although reading, my father read a lot, I never really took much interest. And towards my late teens, 19, 20, I started reading a lot, and I worked in the building trade. I worked in the civil service as a filing clerk, and I just couldn't see any way that I was going to progress until I got some qualifications. And I applied to do my degree on the strength of having published one article in the Folklore Journal, and they allowed me in on the grounds of that. Yeah.
So it was really, if I want to get beyond this point,
absolutely,
I'm going to need a piece of paper with a qualification
absolutely,
on.
Yeah.
But university is much more about just getting a piece of paper, isn't it? How was it being one of the older students in class?
Well, it was really daunting because I didn't have any of the preparation of people, you know, reading English, and my minor was in religious studies and my major was in English literature. And I didn't really have any of the preparation. Although I read a lot, I'd never really written an essay. That was daunting. However, I did find my life experience, such as it was at the age of 24, came in handy, and I was able to participate. And I think I was less shy in participating in seminars and workshops than I would have been when I was 18.
Yeah, I think for me that's absolutely true. At the age of 18, I wasn't ready, but at the age of 24, I knew what I wanted.
Yeah.
What do you think are the challenges of hitting higher education at as a more mature student?
Well, obviously people have other parts of their life that they are committed to other things sometimes by a later start of in any part of education. I think the challenges are also posed because you know, going back to preparation, you get hit with a lot of things. You have to change the way you view the world, and you're confronted with things that you might find hard to deal with in the sense of what's being given to you. And people have to be acclimatized to that and culturalized to that, I think.
Yeah, it really is a whole new world sometimes when you step through those doors.
Yeah.
I think one thing that we do well at GBS is we support our students on that journey. So we do make sure that that whole new world isn't as scary as it might be at a traditional university.
And that's excellent, isn't it?
Yeah, it makes a big difference. I think, what advice would you give to any GBS students who are either just starting or considering starting their higher education journey?
I think go for it. I don't think you'll ever regret it. I think, I mean, we may be talking, you know, we may talk later that life is lifelong learning. You should always be trying to learn whatever stage of your life you're at. But I would always say go for it. You won't regret it. I've never regretted the beginning. And it was hard. I had to work part-time when I was doing my degree to support myself. And it was difficult, but I haven't regretted it at all.
No, I think it's great advice, isn't it? I think sometimes that's all we need, really, isn't it? Somebody just to say to us, go for it, do it. And you're right. I mean, no regrets whatsoever. Yeah. I think you also had a further challenge that you've spoken about. And you've spoken in the past about your dyslexia. How was that? How did you cope with that at university?
Can I go back a bit, actually?
Yeah,
and it
sure.
was, you know, focusing on what, why I didn't achieve at school. Well, I was young for my year. My birthday's in August, so I was one of the youngest always in the year. And that's a big difference. That's a big difference. You know, when you think, you and I got to the secondary school, most of the boys in my class were nearly a year or a year older than me. And that's kind of daunting. I was always behind in everything. And I was always put in what they used to call the remedial groups. Okay. So, I mean, there were three strands in each year of my secondary school. There were three strands, and I was in C4, the lowest of the low. And I left school with nothing. I didn't really know why I struggled to write and read, and it would take me a long time to read. And it wasn't till I did my degree that I took an assessment, and they said, "Yeah, you're dyslexic," and you know, and I suppose it hasn't set me back too far because I do have a PhD as well now. But it is a hindrance, and also. Coming to that by the time I was 26 when I realized that was the reason why I struggled to read and write as easily as my peers, definitely at school.
We hear a lot about adult diagnosis of dyslexia, don't we, and how it's an eyes wide open moment that suddenly the veil is lifted and you understand. Did you have that kind of experience?
Absolutely.
It's amazing, really. And as you say, PhD, it didn't hold you back with your studies whatsoever. But going back to that very first degree, a bachelor degree, did it change your life, getting a bachelor?
Kind of. Far fewer people had degrees in 1989 than they do now. So to have a degree was quite a value into having it. You know, into having a degree, it did. It gave me more choices.
Yeah.
I was able to consider things that I hadn't been able to consider before, and it also was a kind of sense of permission. It was a sense of empowerment and permission. You realised you have achieved something.
I think that's it, isn't it? Empowerment, the feeling that you have something in your pocket that is going to help you, that it's a little bit superpowerish. Feel, yes, I am allowed to apply for that job. I am allowed to ask for more money. It's definitely that. So where did you go to next? So you got the bachelor degree and then you went on to a master's program?
No, not quite. I did some teaching abroad, English as a foreign language, and in England. Then I took a PGCE, the Postgraduate Certificate for Education in Further Education, and that was at Greenwich University. And that was probably the worst year of my life. Worst year of all. It was thrown straight into the deep end of teaching practice in some pretty tough London schools. That was a baptism of fire. That was a really hard year. And it was very different to the degree because really it's all applicable. It's all learning and being in the workplace and learning as you go along. So it was very daunting.
And then going back to us being mature students at university, actually, when you think some people are going into that PGCE at a very young age. And so with all your life experience and having lived abroad and having been a teacher in a classroom situation, finding it daunting, for a younger person, it must have been very crazy. But it's amazing how our life experience carries us through in those situations, though, isn't it? It's great. So PGCE then led to...
Well, I then became a lecturer at a college, sixth form college in the West Country. And then my mother was very ill, and so my fiancé and I decided we'd move back to Worthing, where I live now. And I took a job at the college, a college in Worthing. And then 2 years later, I got a job at school, and I became an English teacher in a secondary school.
Fab. So quite the career path. And then how old were you when you became Dr. Stephen O'Brien?
Well, I studied for my master's in, I left it a long while because teaching's pretty full on. And it was a very supportive headmaster of a school who said to me, have you thought of taking a master's course?
Okay.
And at Sussex, and here's one I think you might like. And and it was creative writing, and I thought, well, blimey, I'd really like to do that. And so I enrolled on the master's, and because teaching is full on, and then you get your 6 weeks holiday in the year, and I was doing my work largely at Easter and in the summer break, and halfway through the, it was a 2 year course, halfway through the MA, my professor dangled the idea of a PhD in front of me, but he said, you're going to have to get a distinction to get the place on the PhD. And I did, you know, I worked hard at that and did it. But I always thought, no matter how hard study is, it distances you from stuff you didn't want to do. And I remember doing awful work before I did my degree. I worked in somewhere called the Shipham's Paste Factory in Chichester, which was, it was dealing with chicken carcasses and turning them into paste. And I always thought, I'd never want to be doing that kind of thing again, you know?
Yeah, that would be very motivating, I think. Yeah. Very motivating. But, and also like many GBS students, really, you're juggling your studies with having to work to fund those studies, plus a family life with your fiancé at the time. So how was that?
Well, I think when you, as an older student, when you come to that, you make this decision, you're going to have to realise a lot of your work for your academic work is done in corners of your life, which normally would be leisure time. And all through my academic career, I've been used to working long hours, doing things, maybe working all day Sundays, whatever, on my academic work, teaching obviously stands you in good stead for that because you're marking and assessing papers all the time. I think it's realizing that you're not going to be doing a 9-to-5 existence, and somehow that 9-to-5 existence goes out of the window.
It sounds, that's going to sound very familiar to our student body for sure. Many of them are juggling home life, family life, work life, study. And leisure time being the time that you spend writing essays rings very true.
Yeah.
But it also that it shows the importance of having fellow students around you as well, and having those opportunities to work in a team at university when you're studying, and having that as a semi-social life as well. So that's really important.
I agree. That interaction that isn't to do with workplace, it's to do with learning, is great. It has lots of permutations. But then, working as part of a team, I agree with that. And actually, the joy of learning is different from working for someone for money.
Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely a different thing, isn't it? One of the things that I really love at the moment, we've just had a new intake of students here at GBS, and I do love seeing people who I know actually do not know each other sitting down in the canteen, in the cafeteria, drinking coffee together, looking at their work together, and that community is really important, isn't it? And I think that's one thing that we get from our studies is building and expanding our community as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, really important.
Absolutely is. Yeah.
Yeah. While we are talking about juggling lots of different things, it seems today the side hustle is the norm, where everybody's got their job and they've got a bit of extra going on somewhere else, or they're juggling two or three sources of income at once. And I know that you describe your working life as a portfolio career. And I just wondered if you could tell us a bit more about that. It sounds intriguing.
Well, shall I talk about the London magazine now?
Because yeah, sure.
This is an example in point, really. 12 years ago, I joined the British Syrian Society because there's a poet called Nizar Kabani who I was interested in as a Syrian poet, and he died a short time before that. And so I joined the British Syrian Society, and I got to know the cultural ambassador of Syria then, and his name is Reza Manasi, now lives in London. And one day he phoned me up and said, I want you to meet someone who's just bought the London magazine.
Okay.
And I said, okay, what's it about? He said, I'll tell you when we meet him. Now, I'd published work in the London magazine before that, and I thought, wow, that's quite interesting. So I went up to London and I met them at a very posh hotel. They gave me lunch and he said, would you like to be the editor of the London magazine? And, you know, I have a full-time job at the university. I also, a writer. But my lips said yes. I said yes. And then
I'm
not
surprised.
Yeah. And then I thought, how the hell am I going to do this? I suppose one of the things is take those risks. I mean, you could always leave. You could always get back out of it. But say yes to these things and see how it goes. And that's how I came to the London magazine. I think, you know, that point of being prepared to take opportunities that are offered to you. It's very important.
Yeah, you know, when opportunity knocks, we say yes, don't we?
I think
that's a lesson that I also learned very early on, that opportunities rarely come twice. So just say yes.
And
if you need to, you just wing it. But
I agree. Can I just add then also, it takes a long time for you to realize as a person you're building up portfolio, an array of expertise that people think are valuable. And I'm the worst person ever to congratulate myself on anything, but you come to a point when people need or think they need what you've got to offer, and this portfolio career, people now often approach me to ask me to do things for them.
Okay,
so I think up until I was in my early 40s, I was always seeking out things, you know, but there was a certain time when your expertise becomes attractive to people.
Yeah, and that's also being part of the result of being part of your community however you describe that community, but being part of, and we're all parts of different communities,
Absolutely,
aren't we?
We are.
But actually, that's the benefit of building relationships and getting to know people. Taking that time is super important, isn't it?
Yes, because work. I mean, learning's a joy and learning is a community. Work is a community. That, as you say, a network. It's crucial. It's crucial for advancement in any career, I think.
Really, yeah. And I think some of our students have the opportunity to go on to take professional qualifications. Mm. So, for example, our finance students can then, with their degree, they have eligibility to take the ACCA course or the different qualifications for finance, for accounting. And again, all of these opportunities are opportunities for learning and for advancement, but also for networking and meeting more people. It's super important.
Yeah. I take my students from Portsmouth, particularly on the MA, because I'm course leader for the MA. So in normal times, we have a big party each year in the House of Parliament on the terrace.
Wow.
And literary agents come, journalists come, publishers come, politicians will be there, and it's a great chance for networking for young people who want to be within, say, the world of publishing, the world of journalism. And I say to my students, when we go in, you must just go up and talk to people. Don't stand in a group of four having the free champagne, because it won't do you any good, and you just have to get out there and hustle and talk to people.
You absolutely do, don't you? You're not there to meet students that you already know.
No.
But that touches on something else that I know you've spoken about, which is imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
And sometimes we're at those events and we just think, oh, why am I here? How am I here? I don't know how to act in this situation. Yeah. I wonder if you could just tell us how you see imposter syndrome. What do you? How would you define it?
Well, first, can I just say, firstly, there's, I always think back to a children's program when I was young called Mr. Ben. And Mr. Ben was a character in a bowler hat and a suit, and there was a fancy dress shop at the end of his road. And he used to go in the shop, and there would be a costume, like a knight or a cowboy. I can't remember. The spaceman was one of them. And then the man who owned the shop would say, go and try it on. And when he went into this other room, the changing room, there was another door always, and it led him into the cowboy land or this space land or whatever. But always at the end of the program, the man from the fancy dress shop appeared. Just, I think there was one when he was a knight in shining armor going to get the girl after he defeated the dragon. And the man appeared in this medieval place and said, come with me. And he was back in the fancy dress shop again. Okay. And I've always felt a bit like that, that somehow someone's going to make me go back to working on a building site, that somehow I'd be working back in Chippen Space Factory, doing that kind of work. I think it never leaves you. I know lots of people who come from private education, and it gives them a sense of entitlement in the worst of them, but even in the best of them, a sense of empowerment that I never had when I was young. And I think you struggle against it all your life if you don't have the kind of privileges. But have I overcome it? No, I don't think I'll ever overcome it, because I always feel as I'm in the wrong suit or in the wrong, it's just not right for me. But do you understand that? I suppose.
Yeah, I totally get it. I think I also come from a very working class background and had really dreadful jobs, very much like yourself, before joining university. And while at university as well, one Christmas I spent cutting up the foam to make the wreaths for all the old people who died over Christmas. I mean, it was a terrible job. Mm. But I think it's probably going to be something that's very real for our students as well.
Yeah, yeah.
That as we juggle family life and work, and all of a sudden we're looking at different jobs and a different elevated career path, it's very easy to slip into that, am I worth this?
Yeah.
Is this my place?
Yeah.
How do we get past that? How do we, as people, how do we move beyond that?
I think qualifications are a proof in their own right. They're a proof, and surely, in this country, in any country, if you become qualified in something, that gives you, that should give you at least some sense of you're equal to anyone.
And
I mean, as I say, it's probably a lifelong thing of not feeling entirely there, but on the other side, you pinch yourself and think, yeah, well, I've not made a bad journey yet,
No, I think you're all right, really. Yeah. But I do think it kind of, it's just hard, isn't it, to think, yes, I am in the right place. This is where I should be. But it does go back to what we said earlier about that qualification in your pocket being a bit of a superpower.
It is. And, it is. Yeah.
And giving you the right and the freedom to say, I can apply for this job. I can push myself forward.
Yeah. And sometimes, autobiographical. When I was my graduation, my father and my grandmother and my mother came. My grandmother said, when I went up to get my degree, she said to my father, does that mean he's won? And she didn't really know what a degree was. She didn't understand what it was. My father on the day said, so what does it give you? What's it do for you? And I think, perhaps some of the students at GBS come from families where they don't quite understand why you're doing this. And my father probably, I don't think he ever quite understood what I was doing. Mm-hmm. He trusted construction workers. That was his life. He worked in the building sites, and then people for him were people who built things.
Yeah.
And so for me, pursuing a degree in English literature, religious studies, he just didn't understand that. No. And I think sometimes the GBS students were probably feeling this, there can be a sense of why, what are you doing?
Yeah. I think that's it, isn't it? Especially from peer groups.
Yeah.
And current colleagues. Yeah. It's do you think you're special? But actually, we should all think we're a bit special.
I think we should.
Yeah. I want to ask you a bit about writing because you're a published author. You teach creative writing at very high levels, and I am. But you were also somebody who said that before you went to university, you'd barely written an essay, and that's going to be very real for our GBS students that arriving in a place of study and not having written an essay for a long time.
Yeah.
For me, fear of the blank page is very real. Immediately, if I'm actually writing or typing onto a screen, the first thing I do is get something onto the paper because I don't want to be looking at a blank page. What are your tips getting started in writing, in academic writing?
I think one of the basic tips is to read and to read widely and read newspapers, read anything you can, read novels, learn about formal language, formal expression. We all speak in two registers, a colloquial register, an everyday register. It doesn't fit essays. It's not, I was marking some essays on the way up on my laptop, and a lot of students fall into this colloquial phrasing and expression. I think it's a journey, but it's, read as much as you can. And as you say, it's rather like artists like to break the canvas by just putting any bit of colour on, don't they? When they come painting. So I agree with you. Write anything to begin with.
Just get started. Yeah. It's when we write in general everyday life, the things that we write, if we're writing a job application letter or we're writing a letter to an email of complaint to somebody, we're probably going to go online and look for what other people have done in that situation. And I think it's important to remember the power of having a good model in front of you as well. Not obviously not copying the content, but copying the form and realizing this is how other people have done it, so I can do something that takes away the pain.
It does. I think, there's plenty of stuff out there to look at online, to look at how to write an application, letter application, and CV. I would say that in my London magazine work, we have people applying for posts, and we may have 300 or 400 applications per job. I have to say, any spelling mistakes, any expression errors, any informality, we'd probably just put that in the bin straight away.
Yeah. It's tough, isn't it? But that's for a very specific writing job, isn't it?
That's a specific writing job.
Yeah. One of the good things that the support team do at GBS, the academic support team, is they recognise that people don't necessarily have essay writing skills, and they run those essay writing workshops. They provide lots of academic support on how to research, how to be a good active researcher. We also have the careers and next steps team, and they will help everybody with CV writing, application writing as well. And I think a good piece of advice for anybody is just find out what support's available to you.
I think it's crucial and wonderful that GBS are doing this, but crucial. My first essay ever at university was, they used to post the essay titles on a board, and I went to look at it, and it said, a 2,000-word critical appreciation of Pope's epistle to Lord Bathurst. I'd never written an essay before. I didn't even know what they were saying in the question. I didn't know what the question meant. I think, if someone had been able to sit me down a few times and shown me some research skills as well, but also what a rough pro forma of an essay, an outline, would look like, that would have been really useful.
Makes a difference, doesn't it? Makes a huge difference. Just so, one last question from me: a skill, piece of knowledge, something that you learned at university, is the one thing that had a big impact and that you still use today. Something that you learned:
how to shape an opinion. How to give an opinion. I probably wasn't very good before I started my degree on giving opinions or even kind of knowing how to formulate them. And I think that's my first degree gave me that I could, with a bit of confidence, state my state my case and give an opinion.
Fab, great stuff. So, thank you for that, Dr. Stephen O'Brien.
Thanks for listening to this GBS podcast. GBS is a provider of higher education with flexible courses in business, finance, accounting, healthcare, technology, and construction. With courses from HND to bachelor and master's degrees, and study options that include weekdays, evenings, and weekends, there's a course that's right for you. Visit globalbanking.ac.uk or email the GBS team at admissions@globalbanking.ac.uk.